What's up, everyone? You're listening to Before the Whistle Podcast. We are a new sports podcast that's recording our first episode today. The point of this show is me and Andrew here are going to discuss three topics that's going on currently in the sports world and give you our opinion on them and see what we think about them. You can follow Andrew at AndrewCosta84. My Twitter handle is Costa_Matt, and you can also follow us on BFW Podcast. Podomatic is going to be our hosting website for our podcast, so you can get us there or on iTunes. How you doing, dude?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, can't complain. Just finished watching the Oscars. That wasn't bad.
Yeah, it was great.
Leo finally won.
Finally. Now he can go back to do what he's always wanted to do and fulfill his dream of doing buddy cop movies.
Honestly, that would be great. Could you imagine Leo in a buddy cop movie?
With him and Will Ferrell, it'd be great.
Yeah, honestly, his speech was good, but I kind of wish he just dropped the Oscar and just said, fuck it, I'm out.
I'm surprised he didn't thank the bear.
That's true. He played a big part. So, that being said, yeah, so Leafs made the big trade. They got, who was it again, from Washington?
They acquired, the real deal was a second round selection for the 2016 draft. Mm-hmm. They got Connor Carrick and forward Brooks Lake.
Yes, yeah. And they retained no salary. They gave them Daniel Winnick
in exchange. And Anaheim's fifth round selection for this year, too. So it seems like they're just, seems like any pick that they're trying to acquire, they're going to utilize as a tool. I mean, that's a good move because you take that fifth round pick, now you move it into a second round pick. It's just good business. Lou's cleaning house.
Can we talk about how shady Lou Lamoriello is? Like, players have just disappeared. JVR's shut down. No one knows where Joffrey Lupul is. Rafi Torres isn't coming to the Leafs after that trade. He's fire sailing everyone.
They called in an Italian hitman. He's just pulling everybody out.
it's incredible what he's doing though for the Leafs. Like, for the first time in years, because we've followed this franchise for as long as we can remember.
Yeah, 32 miserable years.
Yeah, and they've been terrible, almost all of them. They had that one memorable run with Gilmore, but since then, really, there's nothing.
There was also the run with Sundin in the early 2000s, but, I mean, it's been bad management, mediocrity, trying to build a team by patch-filling patches. That's just not how you work, more so in the modern day. You can't buy a team like that. You have to build it right down from the U system. And I mean, if you look at their farm team, the Marlies, they're crushing it. So I mean, there's a lot of promise. A lot of promise.
Well, that too, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of these players came back. You got to think a lot of these guys they're sending out are on 1 year contracts. They're rental players. Like Roman Pulak did last year. He came back to the Leafs. They signed him. They sent him again. They got another draft pick for him.
And they could have done it too with Franzen last year if they wanted to. Unfortunately, you just wanted too much money. And it was finally, sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't end up signing.
Very true.
You know,
Things didn't really work out for him in Nashville either when he went last year. And then,
well, even the Reimer trade the other day. Like, you know, he's a free agent at the end of the year. That could become a signing option in the offseason. But, you know, you've got good goaltending in the minors. Well, mediocre goaltending in the minors. But, you know, Babcock can coach these guys up. And who knows what we have.
Honestly, I'm not even worried about the goaltending situation either with the franchise. Because if any team has showed you, if you put up a good enough team around them, you can win a cup. Look at Chicago. They had been miserable for years. They put a good team around Antti Niemi, won in 2010. Now they had a good team around Corey Crawford, who isn't terrible, but he's no Carey Price.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. And to be honest, I'd rather not have good goaltending right now because it would probably mask a lot of the issues that the team does have.
Well, I think that's a big problem with Montreal. Montreal's Carey Price was literally hiding all their
deficiencies.
Yeah, and you got rid of him due to injury. And look at them. They've been on fire sale mode. Dale Weiss went to Chicago, and they're looking for poised for another run. And we'll get to that a little later. But do you think the Leafs should make a run at Stamkos, or even Jonathan Drouin, who's on the market?
Well, it's a tricky situation because you're not quite sure what Drouin is or can be. Stamkos, you know what you're going to get. You know, he's going to be expensive, but the beautiful thing is after next year, the cap's going to be pretty much almost at the basement, realistically speaking.
Yeah.
They've taken on a lot of salary now, but even still, those are all expiring contracts. Yeah. So they'll have the room for it. And in my this is a personal opinion, I wouldn't mind having somebody like Stamkos, because that's a guy you can build the team around. He's your main cog. He's a vet who can teach the young guys coming up, this is how the game's to be played, this is how you be free as a professional. And I think that was a lot of Edmonton's problem. They had all these young kids and no real leadership to show these guys.
It's kind of funny because you said he's a vet, and I think he's going to be 26 or 27.
Yeah, he's about 26 now, yeah.
But do you think that's working backwards from what the Leafs are trying to do? Because what it seems to me is they're hoarding draft picks, they're trying to get as young as possible and build a brilliant system up and go from there. Getting Stamkos, isn't that kind of saying, well, everything we're kind of doing is being rushed now because we're getting an elite star?
No, not at all.
But you have to think, by the time we even get good, he'll be 30.
Stamkos will be, it'll be an 8-year deal for sure. So wherever Stamkos is going, it's going to be for the long term. So if he does decide to sign in Toronto, he knows that there's going to be another 3 years of mediocrity that he's got to work around. And you know, again, when you're building, I don't think that rushes, but that just is a statement to say, you know,
this
is what we're working at. You know, you've got that main piece there to build around, and then you let your young picks, your young talent come in and complement that.
But then I pose this question. What if the Leafs go, hypothetically speaking, they go and they grab Stamkos. We become a contending team and he's 35, 36, let's just say. And he has a cap hit of 13 mil. By that point, and he's not producing at the same level or rate that he is now, would you look back at that trade and say, we made a mistake, that we shouldn't have got him? Because you're going to have players like Nylander, Connor Brown, Kapanen, Mitch Marner, and everyone else who we draft being, if they get Austin Matthews, they're going to have to sign these guys.
not necessarily. It's. I mean, at this point, if it gets to that point where he's not producing, he's the later end of his career, you would assume that the cap has gone up that much. And the key is you're going to always have a couple guys taking up majority of your cap hit. You're going to have probably 3-4 players taking up about 70% of your cap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and to have a cup-winning team nowadays, if you look at, again, the Chicago model, the LA model, they're getting huge production from guys on entry-level deals.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to, the way the game's playing now. Yeah. And you're hoping the cap would go up, but right now, the way the Canadian dollar's trending, it's not likely.
No, it's not, but I mean, there will be movement upward. It's just, it won't be NBA style.
No, it's not going to be rolling in Benjamins, as they say.
No.
Speaking of the Blackhawks, since we've mentioned them so many times, they look poised to make another serious run.
They mean business. They're determined to go on a back-to-back cup win, which I can't even remember the last time. Was it the Penguins?
No, because they went back-to-back finals, but they lost one and then went back.
No, I'm saying the 90s. Who was the last one to do back-to-back? Was it New Jersey?
Wouldn't it have been Detroit recently? We'll take it up.
Yeah, maybe it was Detroit. Yeah, I think you're right. Late 90s was Detroit. Yeah, that the Yzerman.
Even the Hawks, they went and made a huge statement picking up Andrew Ladd. Now, the brilliant thing about that trade is they finally have someone that's going to slot into that left wing with Jonathan Toews and Marian Hossa when Hossa comes back from injury.
Not to mention Ladd's going home, realistically speaking.
He was there when they won in 2010. So
That was a tough deal for when Stan got in there. It was hard to let.
They had to
let him go. And it's amazing just the management of that team to have to rebuild essentially every cup win. They've had to strip away
certain players and
because you've got those young guys
that come in
on entry level deals or young deals.
And the thing was, they got
that
lucky.
Are crushing it.
They got lucky. You think Andrew Shaw, who was undrafted 3 times. Fell into their lap, who's been great. Look at Brendan Saad. They had to trade Saad because the cap was an issue, and look what they did. They go get Panarin. Panarin's been unreal. He's probably going to win the Calder because McDavid was hurt for quite a while, but the guy's playing with Patrick Kane and Anisimov in the second line, and they've been lighting it up. So you got to give credit to Bowman, you're right, because what he's done is he's essentially found 5 or 6 players, found a core and built around it. Like, look at Duncan Keith. Duncan Keith's cap hits at, like, $5.3 million.
Such a steal, because at the time he chose term over money.
He turned took term. They signed that long deal before they put on all those cap rules.
Yeah, before the semi-lockout. Actually, to go back, yeah, it was the Red Wings, 98-97.
The Red Wings had that dynasty team. But Chicago can likely be the next team to do it. They picked up Dale Weiss, who has a career high of 14 goals. He's approaching that.
Yeah, and he hasn't, if I'm not mistaken, he hasn't had much ice time this year, right?
He's played. He's been probably one of Montreal's better forwards. If you think about it, looking back last year,
Bit of a stretch.
next to Price, last year in the playoffs, Dale Weiss was the best
player for Montreal. Pacioretty wasn't really producing.
No, PK
but he was still injured. They were picking up some, a healthy Montreal. I guess that's a bit of a cliche, though, because every team at their healthiest would be a different story.
But see, Montreal's an interesting case because I think at their healthiest, Price saves them completely.
You got Price and that. Well, that's what I say is, coming up the World Cup of Hockey, do you put Price on the team?
If I was Montreal, I'd shut him down. I wouldn't. I would say the season's a wash. Shut him down.
If you're Canada, do you add him to the team right now?
I don't think so. I think you can't do that because he's uncertain. If he can't play, then you're going to have to throw in another player.
See, I still would just because at any point, if you know he's injured, he's clearly going to be the best goalie. So if he's fit, he's number one. There's no question about it. So I would add him because you can always do the injury replacement.
But see, there's Roberto Luongo, who's been having a very good year this year with Florida that I think everyone forgets to mention because he's in Florida, but he's been fantastic.
Florida on a whole is just that they're making their way up there and they're going to be a name soon. And I mean, they're selling out games. Yeah, when was the last time that happened?
You have Jágr there who's helping the young players. A guy like Jágr, it's true. The hair is everything to him. But if you think about it, maybe this is what the Leafs need to consider and should start doing. Getting a veteran like Jágr who puts in crazy amount of work.
That's your Stamkos. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's a point to it. But the Hawks,
glad you agree.
I guess so. I was just playing devil's advocate, but the Hawks.
No, you were playing wrong.
True story. The Hawks look to be making a deep run. Then you have the Kings who just picked up
the West. It's yet again. It's going to be the West. And I don't know. It's weird how sports works this way. You see it in the NBA. You see it in the NHL. It's like those Western conferences are just stacked with talent for some reason.
And I don't get it. Like, the East has who's the best team in the league, and they're having a great season. But when you look at the teams that the West are putting together from the trade deadline, can you compete? Milan Lucic, Kopitar, Jonathan Quick. Like, the Kings are also very good. Anaheim's rolling right now.
And that's crazy because the biggest markets you would assume are in the East. But I think a lot of that has to do with just the Western teams were so bad for so long. So, when you're that bad, you're getting all the picks. You're getting all the young talent because of your picks.
The salary cap has definitely helped teams, especially with the drafting and everything. It's made a difference in the NHL. You can see it. It's become a closer league.
Oh, yeah, of course. The two-point system. It's just... It's interesting because it's still the same powerhouses, but those come back to, again, good management, utilizing a special crop of players. I mean, Doughty, Kopitar in LA.
You can't forget Doughty, man. That guy's insane.
Kane, who's basically on a level on his own. Taves, as great as he is, he may not be the loudest player in the regular season, but come playoffs, there's no other center I would want than Taves when it comes to playoff hockey.
Look at Game 7 last year against the Ducks.
He could not play a single game in the regular season as far as I'm concerned, because I know as soon as Game 1 starts,
he's there.
He's your beast.
Remember that song, All I Do Is Win, DJ Khaled? Yeah. I'm pretty sure he wrote it for Jonathan Taves. And it's funny thinking, just on a funny note, when Andrew Ladd got traded back to Chicago, the first thing that ran to my mind was, we got a wicked left winger now. He was great in Winnipeg. It was, great. Every fan that ever bought a Ladd jersey for Chicago had to wear it.
Totally redeemed myself.
Yeah, Stan Bowman's thinking about the little guy.
There's that one fan who bought it on clearance sale just because he wanted a Blackhawks jersey.
Yeah,
and he's like, he'd be like, y'all laughed at me.
It's so true. Now, here's the trade that I found rather confusing. So the Rangers picked up Eric Staal. Now Mark Staal plays on their team and the brothers are there. My question is, do you really think the Rangers needed A to make that trade? Because all they've done is give up draft picks.
They've really mortgaged the future. But they started last year mortgaging the future. They've just further done it. Maybe they're trying the Vancouver model, two brothers together.
I don't, when I look at the Eastern Conference, they're there, but I don't look at them competing with Washington. I think.
Well, again, Washington, as great as they are now in the run they're on, President's Trophy doesn't mean anything in the long scheme of things. And with the East, record. The East is like, it's really the least division because it's anybody can come out of there on top. So I'm done predicting what's going to happen because I didn't think Tampa would have done what they did last year. I wouldn't have predicted Montreal doing what they did the year before. You can't put all your money into one player and assume that a team's going to make a deep playoff run because of one player. Not in this game today.
No, of course not. You need a whole team around you. And you're seeing it again. Montreal is a perfect example.
Yeah, so it's just the East is – it's always going to be tricky. So did they need to make the trade? No, you don't really need to make any trade when you know you're already in a good position to make the playoffs. But, you know, if the two brothers think – if they believe that the two brothers together can give them that extra little – whatever to get to the finals, and so be it. But realistically speaking, any Eastern team going to the finals, I'd be hard pressed to see any of them beat an LA, Chicago, and Anaheim. Even Anaheim on a bad day is not a team that you really assume you're going to take a game from.
No, you can't. You know what's funny? Charles Barkley recently kind of said it best: you're either a contender or you're a pretender. And being in that no man's land, that level of mediocrity, you're just a stepping stone for these other teams. And really, what's the point of that? Like, going to the playoffs and likely getting eliminated in the first round, there's nothing to, I don't get it.
Yeah, you're just a team to pad other team stats.
As a franchise owner, I would never want to be that team. I'd either want to suck for a long time, win my championship or two, and then go back to sucking for a while so that we can become good again to win the championship.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So, being that we are in Toronto, there's another piece of information and stuff we need to talk about, and this has been publicly talked about nonstop. The Blue Jays, last summer, took over the city.
They took over the country, man.
Even just the city, the country.
This has been the most engaged off-season by a fan base in years in this city. And, I mean, usually the Leafs have all these trades going on, and the only thing people want to talk about is Jose Bautista's contract or what are we doing with Edwin? It's not, and that's just a testament to what winning can do.
Well, absolutely. Like, I've never seen anything like that. I was born in 92. I wasn't old enough to even really comprehend what the Jays' run was like. I've ever had of playoff baseball in Toronto, and it was incredible. It was the greatest thing ever. I was looking when it ended. I was so upset because I wanted it to keep rolling. It was
different. I remember it, but I was a kid, so I don't like to see it now as an adult. What a feeling!
It was amazing. Now
I'm hungry for more. Want a bat flip.
But are we gonna get that? Because Bautista came out and basically said he wanted 5 years.
It was reported that he's looking for. What was the deal? It was 150 million. He was looking about 30. Yeah, 5 years, 30 million.
30 million a year.
And it's being reported that.
It might be more.
Yeah, it might be more.
Now
it was, I believe, a Rick. What's his name? Rick Westhead.
Yeah.
Reported that.
Now here's the thing. Jose was on a very friendly contract, and a lot of people before the contract negotiations happened or had any reports came out, they said maybe he'll take a hometown discount. So when the first day of spring training in Dunedin, he comes out and he basically gives a big presser and says, I don't believe in hometown discounts. I've given this franchise more than enough. It's my turn to get paid what I deserve. Do you think he's a little wrong in this situation? Like, he's not going to be able to play
He deserves to get paid, yes. But you can't say that he was on a hometown discount because he paid market value.
They
paid market value after a good season from him to extend him. And not even himself. At the end of the day, it was a deal they both agreed on. So he didn't feel he was worth
more.
What he's asking now.
Yeah.
You know, and again, he got a good market price. It just turned out to be a very good deal for the Jays because of his...
He overperformed.
I wouldn't say he overperformed, but he hit peak. And who else would have taken that kind of contract on or that kind of risk, right? So
it's the risk reward, I guess.
Not every deal you sign is going to be a bad one for the franchise. There's situations where, again, and you look at the Duncan Keith contract in Chicago, you know, is he getting underpaid for what he is? Absolutely, by today's standard. But there's other factors to deals as outside of term and money, you know.
Oh, of course. You know,
that have a lot to do with it too, right?
But at some point, do you not think that Jose has to kind of clue in and come back to reality and sit and say, getting up in age, I'm not going to be able to play right field like I can, and I should, for the kind of money I'm going to be getting. Like, I understand maybe the next 2-3 years of that deal, it might look okay because you'll continue to hit bombs like Jose does. We'll get the typical bat flip Jose, but slowly you're going to see a decrease, especially in the fielding aspect. Like, do you not think he should at one point come down and say, maybe I'm being unrealistic? Like, I don't disagree with the jury.
No, he's not going to do that because his agent's going to be telling him what he's worth, and he's doing this for his peers as well, you know, to be a field player, to make $30 million. Is a big step, right? So he's out there for his union buddies as well. The thing is, if that's what he wants, it might be a time where the Jays say, look, go out there free agency. If you get it, that's great. We can't afford you at that price.
I don't think I would pay it. I don't blame the Jays.
But if nobody else is willing to pay it, then come back and talk to us, and we'll work something out.
Well, essentially, you're only really worth what anyone's ever really willing to pay for.
Exactly. Right? Who wants to spend $30 million a year
on a depreciating asset, essentially?
Exactly. Somebody at 36 who's not going to be, you know, even when you start talking the DH level.
Edwin.
What DH makes $30 million a year?
It's unprecedented.
Right? No, so you know he's not going to end up in the National League. So that cuts out half your demand right there. Mm-hmm. So if it's going to be in the American League, it's going to be a team that's got reserves. It just, as a fan, would kill me to see him play for a New York or a Boston team. But
even Tampa Bay. If he went to Tampa Bay, Jose, it would be crushing.
They couldn't afford him, though. That's nobody. Tampa's not going to pay their payroll. Half their team ends up leaving.
Yeah.
And what drives me nuts is we should be buying from them. Like, Zobrist is a Jays killer. Why is he in Kansas City? We should have gone after him.
Yeah, seriously. That team last year was just incredible. They hit everything. First pitch, they got hot at the perfect
time. I don't care what anybody says. You don't need 3-4 guys on your team hitting 40 home runs. You need 9 guys hitting
Hitting
300 on your team, getting on base. And that's, you know, looking at their leadoff situation. Pilar coming out saying walks are overrated, that instantly would have me put him in the 9th spot because you need to get on base, and walks are just as valuable.
Yeah, it doesn't matter how you get on base, as long as
you just get on base. So, I mean, again,
it changes the complexion of how the pitcher is going to approach a batter when he knows he has a guy on first.
Yeah, so and in that rotation, Donaldson, Batista, and Edwin, nobody wants to walk.
No.
The first baseman anyway, so you're going to work him and let him show you some pitches in the plate. But
it's going to be an interesting offseason for the Jays
spring training now is going to be really interesting. So we'll see what happens. And, you know, I just think that Jose, you know, he's a bit of a me guy, but, like, just the way he came out, regardless of what it was, it's not the way to do it. I liked how Edwin had approached it. You know, when they said, what's your number? And he goes, 40. I'm going for 40 home runs. And that's kind of the thing. And it's like, you know, let the deal makers work the deals in the back room, because going out there and putting the pressure on the via fans and stuff, it isn't going to work. The reality of the situation is there's a budget the team has. The dollar's gone down, so everything Rogers is doing is going to cost more money.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't. Would it suck to lose him? Yes. Can you find a very good defensive outfielder out there at some point?
Oh, I'm sure you could.
You can. And even if they do have. Yeah, and even if you get half the home run production that he gets, your offensive lineup is still ridiculous.
Yeah, Donaldson has remotely close to as good as the years he did. You have Edwin still, and.
And you got a proper Troy Tulowitzki at the plate. Like,
Kevin Pillar was in the playoffs. He was good.
You're going to have Devin Travis, who was really hot behind the plate before he started to pick up the shoulder injuries.
Yeah.
You know, so it's just like, and when you have guys like Ryan Goins, who aren't supposed to be hitters, getting with a really good OPS, you know, for Ryan Goins, not that it's by standard, but, you know, the guy was making contact and he was getting on base.
It's the little guys that help you out that aren't necessarily
your middle
big,
yeah your middle of the lineup's gonna get there so
middle of the lineup, you have
so I'm at that stage now where I've kind of divorced Jose. I love him, the bat flip was an iconic moment in Toronto sports history.
It was probably the greatest.
And it'll go down, and you'll be seeing it in top tens for decades to come. But
it's that Jose, that swagger, that ego that he brings to the table.
It's got to make sense. If I'm spending $30 million a year right now, I'm thinking an ace. I'm not thinking an outfield player.
Why would you pay someone for what he has done?
No, not a position player.
Like, shouldn't you be playing someone for what he plans?
What you
to do
plan? What you expect him to do? And that comes back to his deal. You paid him on what you expect him to do.
Like,
he did better, so the deal works out better. What can you do?
Why don't you give him a decent contract? You started a little heavy up front, and then you lower the hit.
I mean, there's
and then you throw bonuses in.
Well, yeah, and that's what that's where you got to get creative in deals like that. Look at it. If he makes the All-Star team, this kind of payment incentive, those kind of, you break it up based on performance. So that's why Golden Glove winner. If you break this many home runs, there's incentives.
Run average, little things like that, RBIs, little stats like that,
and work out a deal almost like they did with Price, where there's an opt out after, you know, do give him 3 years of 30, and then opt out.
Then you after. Have an opt out on both parties,
and then the last two years remaining on the contract, payments based on performance, where you have those incentives of home runs,
makes a
right?
Like, it helps players perform. If you want to keep your asset,
well, it's got to make sense for everybody. If this deal is going to get done, you know. Teams can't afford to overplay players, even though it happens, and you know, players just got to get paid. It's a tough situation, especially because of what he means to the team.
Well, that's just it. He's been the staple of Toronto baseball for years, really. We had Roy Halladay, who was our ace and our staple, and as he left, Jose took the mantle on.
Yeah,
and people growing up in Toronto, you got to think of these kids, they looked up to Jose. He was as iconic as anyone, really. Because Toronto sports hasn't had a face. Since Matt Sundin left, there hasn't been that iconic figure that embraced what it was to be a Toronto sports player.
No, but that's because there's been no other team that's been competitive. Now that you have one, I mean, those Batista sideburns were the thing. The Batista kid, for example.
Well, that was great in the playoffs. You have two sports teams in Toronto finally that are making some noise. You look at the Raptors. The Raptors are
look at that. Lowry and DeRozan are just there.
You know who my favorite
player is? That guy is not paying for dinner anymore in this city right now.
Honestly, I love Corey Joseph, though. Corey Joseph's defense, what a pickup. And you know, if they didn't go after Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, the Spurs, Corey Joseph was never leaving that team.
No, definitely not.
Unbelievable coming off the bench.
Well, as soon as they said they acquired Joseph, I was thinking, how the hell did they pull that off? Yeah, like, to me, that was just solid. He's Canadian. That was the only way we got him.
He's been solid. And to think that even the Raptors, four draft picks in the next 2 years. First rounders, too. So it's not like we're competitive and we still have prospects.
Well, that's the thing, too. A lot of people were upset about, you know, Masai not making any deals on deadline. I think that's probably the best thing he did do. Was
some of the best.
Let's really see what we got. We're not, think of it this way. You have to look at where you're coming out of the East. Are we good enough to beat the Cavs in a 4-game series? I don't think so. Is it worth giving up assets for a couple players that may make us somewhat competitive against the Cavs? I just don't think we're at that stage yet where you go all in.
I think
we're getting there, but we're not. I mean, and anybody has a chance on any given day, but it's just. And then you get past Cleveland. You taking down Golden State with this Raptor squad?
No one's taking down Golden State. They're going to beat the Bulls record.
Are you going to? Is it worth mortgaging all the draft picks you've worked so hard at acquiring to hypothetically beat Cleveland, then get into? And who's to say we don't draw the Bulls first? If the Bulls hit that seven spot, we're screwed. We cannot beat
killers,
that team.
Raptors killers.
We can't beat their towel boy and water boy, let alone their team.
They are the equivalent of the Tampa Bay Rays.
They are. They're Raptor killers.
It's true. But I think
Bulls best Raptors.
I think people forget DeMar Carroll's been injured.
Yeah, we haven't. That's a signing.
That's our deadline acquisition. Getting DeMar Carroll back, I think people forget that.
He's still on the plantar fasciitis, right?
Yeah,
that's time. There's nothing you can do.
Last year, Atlanta, he was their best player in the playoffs.
Oh, easily. That's what you need, is that defensive playoff guy. But they've really stepped up the defensive side of the ball.
Well, you have Bismack Biyombo averaging 2 blocks per game, which is huge when you think about it. Everyone's buying in. You saw the performance they put in against Cleveland.
Oh, that was great.
Kyle Lowry with 40, I think it was 43
points.
He went
beast mode.
Yeah, he did. Even T. Ross has been a lot better. Terrence Ross has been very good for us. He's been making some good shots. Yep. DeMar DeRozan, like, the team is coming together, and there's some serious chemistry there. And I could see why you, Masai, didn't want to make a move that
don't disrupt anything. Yeah, don't disrupt anything now. Don't give up. Don't mortgage the future for... You mortgage the future when your percentages are better. Yeah. Like, you know, what Alex did last year was great. I mean, we were 2 wins away from a World Series. Yeah. That's to me, that was worth the gamble. Even then, it seemed a little bit risky just because going into the deadline day, weren't they a couple games back at 500?
Yeah, they were. I believe they were
like second, 2 or 3 games back at 500, second last in the division?
Yeah, they were in the wild card. Or they were closer. I don't think they were second last in the division, but I think they were second in the wild card spot. Or they were a game out of the wild
card. They were a bit back, but like at that point, looking at the external factors of it, the rest of the division wasn't that great. Everybody was pretty close together. You knew the Yankees weren't going to hang on. So it's like when you have that kind of situation, that's when you kind of go all in for it. But right now, the way the NBA's set up, it's just you don't have a team that can take on. Yeah, you don't have a team that can take on Golden State. You don't have a team that can really. I don't think you're going to beat Cleveland in the playoffs. You'll have some up hands on the in a regular season game, and that happens. Anybody can beat anybody in a regular season one-off. But
we haven't even got out of a first round yet. I think we lost to Brooklyn in 7.
Yeah, and then we get swept
by the Wizards.
Yeah.
Right? So before we even think about doing that, we got to see if this group can even get us into the next round moving forward from the playoffs.
Exactly, and I don't want to give up draft picks just to make the second round of the playoffs.
Essentially, Masai Ujiri is laughing because his team's sitting second. I think they're still 2 games back because they lost.
Oh, they're so close, yeah. Yeah.
So really,
they got a chance at the top seed. But I just, I mark my words, if we're up against the Bulls in the playoffs, first round, I expect to be done in 7.
Now, talking about the NBA, as we have, Golden State, like the West again, is on another level. Golden State is just ridiculous. Like, OKC took him to overtime. Now, I'm a big OKC guy. I enjoy Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook. I think they're awesome.
Yeah, they're great.
And then you have San Antonio. Look how many games San Antonio's back. I think they're 4 or 5 games back of the Golden State Warriors.
You have the best 2 3-point shooters in Klay Thompson and Steph Curry on the same team. Steph Curry can put the ball in sitting down on his bench, as he showed us. It's just, I don't know. I can't.
So, like, but that's the thing. Like, this is a testament to San Antonio because I think people are kind of forgetting about how good they are.
Nah, Pop knows how to put it.
Games back of Golden State. They're 50-9, whereas Golden State's 53-5. Golden State was the fastest team to have 50 wins in the history of the NBA. And yet everyone, as much as it's a great story because they're repeat champs, San Antonio's right there.
Never underestimate a team put on the court by Pop.
You know, Greg Pop's the man. He's a hero.
I just want to go out one night and have a few with that guy. And I just want to see the shenanigans.
He looks like he could drink. Oh, like, man, like he looks like he could smoke and drink.
See, that guy, I just see him with a stogie, a picture to himself.
Yeah, he's saying some aggressive things, just like swearing, dropping F-bombs.
He's got curse words we probably never even heard before.
And you know what? He looks like he's been around.
He's done it. He's weathered. Oh,
yeah. But you love him for it.
I want nothing else.
Yes, seriously. So that's the end of this podcast. This is the first episode. We're going to try and hit you guys up usually on Sundays record and hopefully get the episode out Sunday nights, maybe even Mondays, depending on the scheduling.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, whatever's basically what's going to be is...
Just keep checking back.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to be on Podomatic. We'll send the link out on our Twitter feed. Follow us there. But every episode, we're going to try to take 2 to 3 topics and discuss it every week. This one was a little shorter than usual just due to time frame and everything, but we do have to mention the one highlight of the sports week before we go quickly, and that has to go to Louis Van Gaal and the infamous flop.
Oh yeah,
that was the most ridiculous.
I've been on the fire Van Gaal bandwagon for a while, but when he does stuff like that, you know, he almost totally redeems himself.
I like even that these results
Can we at least have him there just to flop, come out and do that?
That would be hilarious. Just him doing, like, being, you know, the conductor for the support fan?
Yeah.
Like, that's his job, and him just, like, flopping around. That would be great.
So anyways, good.
Everybody, thank you for tuning in to Before the Whistle. This has been a blast. We'll be back next week. Have a great week.
Bye.